The Supreme Court hears arguments tomorrow about adoptions of Native American children. Texas and several parents want the court to overturn a federal law, a rule that makes it harder to separate kids from their extended families or tribes. Here's NPR's legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg.
This is a case that more than usual is steeped in American history. It's also a case that more than usual will resonate with the justices, seven of whom are parents, including two who have adopted children. In 1978, Congress held extensive hearings and found that public and private agencies over time had taken hundreds of thousands of Indian children from their homes, sometimes by force, and placed them in institutions or families with no ties to their tribes. Chuck Hoskin, Jr. is the current chief of the Cherokee Nation.
About a third of Native children were adopted away through child welfare agency actions. And that group, about 85%, were adopted outside of tribal families.
The tribes saw these actions as a threat to their very existence. And so did Congress. In 1978, it passed the Indian Child Welfare Act, known by the acronym ICWA. The law established minimum federal standards for removing Native children from their families, required state courts to notify tribes when an Indian child is removed from his or her home, and required that in foster and adoption placements, first preference be given to a member of the child's extended tribal family, then other members of the tribe, and if neither of those is available, a home with a different tribal family. Now, however, the state of Texas and several families who are adopting Indian children are challenging the law in court. They contend it amounts to an unconstitutional racial preference and that the federal law impermissibly intrudes on state law. Jennifer and Chad Brackeen are among the prospective adoptive parents who are challenging the law. The couple, with two biological children of their own, fostered a baby born to a Navajo mother and a Cherokee father in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And when the mother's parental rights were terminated by the state, the Brackeens adopted the boy. When the same biological mother had another child, a girl, the Brackeens moved to get her transferred from another foster home to theirs. And now they're seeking to adopt her, too, over the objections of the tribe and the child's great aunt.
We feel like her closest living relative is her brother. That's why we pushed to try to get her placed with us.
It's heartbreaking to us that there are laws out here that say it is better for her to live in a tribal home, any tribal home, before she is allowed to stay in our home with her brother.
Representing the Brackeens in the Supreme Court, lawyer Matthew McGill will tell the justices that ICWA's provisions amount to an unconstitutional racial classification.
It categorizes children based on whether the children are Indian or not Indian. And then it categorizes prospective parents based on whether they are Indian.
The Biden administration, like past administrations of both political parties, is defending the law. Citing a string of precedents dating back to the early days of the Republic, the government says that ICWA draws classifications based not on race, but on connections to tribal groups. And under the Constitution, those tribal groups are separate sovereign nations, essentially a political group. Lawyer Ian Gershengorn represents the tribes.
From the very first moments of our constitutional history, Congress has legislated for Indians. And so the idea that somehow doing so violates the Equal Protection Clause or is an impermissible racial classification just seems to me impossible to square with the text.
The Brackeen's lawyer counters with a different argument.
The real injustice of ICWA is that it deprives children of an individualized assessment of their own best interests. And it replaces that individualized best interests of the child test with this hierarchy of preference.
ICWA does not prevent individualized assessment of children and where they should be.
Catherine Fort is director of the Indian Law Clinic at Michigan State University.
Our state courts do that every day. I personally don't know a state court judge who would be comfortable being told that they weren't allowed to do an individualized assessment.
But for an Indian child, she says, that individualized assessment includes consideration of the child's relationship with her relatives, her language, her religion, and her tribal tradition.
the child isn't separate from her tribe. That child is sacred to that tribe.
Ian Gershengorn adds this.
I think one of the oddest parts of the other side's argument is that they fault Congress for singling out tribes for special treatment when the Constitution itself singles out tribes for special treatment.
The Constitution does indeed give Congress nearly complete power to legislate on matters involving trade and relations with Indian tribes. That constitutional provision is called the Indian Commerce Clause. But the Brackeens counter that their case is about a child identified as YRJ.
YRJ is not, you know, the property of the Indian tribe.
Lawyer Matthew McGill.
He is a citizen of the United States and also a citizen of the state of Texas. And there is no reason why this child should not have all of the same rights as every other child born in the state of Texas.
The tribes acknowledge that this child was removed from her biological mother's home because of the mother's drug addiction. But they add that this doesn't mean that the tribes have no interest in her subsequent adoption. There's no way to know how many thousands of Native children are removed from a biological parent's home or how many are involved in subsequent adoptions. But Professor Fort says most of these cases are not contentious, noting that nationwide, from 2015 to 2021, there were appeals in only 254 cases. That's no comfort to those involved in months or years of adoption disputes, nor is it any comfort to the more than 500 Indian tribes who see this case as a foot in the door that could lead to other cases challenging Indian preferences involving land, water, fishing rights, and even gaming rights. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.